People are shocked by this, how woke it became. It's like, well, where have you guys all been for the last 20 years as we've watched algorithms be manipulated? And you know this, you go, you search YouTube, and YouTube can push you in any which direction it wants to. We have all been fed lies, and these lies have now been compiled by machines, and now the machines are giving us back lies. And we are at a very, very strange precipice. And I thought, man, already I knew everything I needed to know about this guy. World's richest man. It's midnight. He's got bloodshot eyes. He's tired. He's getting hit in every which direction by the media and politicians. He's basically saying to me, hey, you guy that I probably barely know, do you need me to stay late tonight? Like, I was like, wow, this guy is really something. And I was like, no, it's okay. You can go to bed. We'll pick it up tomorrow. They were showing me how the whole system works. And basically the entire system was built to shadow ban. He testified under oath that Twitter does not shadow ban. Complete lie. What we've done now is we've completely blown apart the Overton window so that now there's so much information, and I generally believe that more information is good, but we've so blown it apart that we can't agree on basic stuff out here.
Hello and welcome to the Winston Marshall Show with me, Winston Marshall. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Dave Rubin. You'll know Dave Rubin as host of The Rubin Report. He is one of the pioneers of YouTubing, and he has been a pioneer in the alternative tech world, as well as alternative media, setting up Locals and being a part of the Rumble revolution. I wanted to ask him about the AI, Google Gemini scandal and how it will affect the upcoming election, what it means in terms of censorship, and what it means in terms of manipulating the people of America. We took a deep dive into that, into his Twitter files experience, and we brought it back to the future of America, not just the near future with the upcoming elections, but what it means for the distant future. Can America survive the reaction to a Trump and second Trump presidency, or can the world survive a continuation of Biden's geopolitics? All of that and much, much more. I ask, before you start listening to this show, one thing you can do to support me and support the show is to press the subscribe button. If you press the subscribe button, I can bring on more great guests and we can explore important topics that you want to learn about. Without further ado, though, Dave Rubin.
You're listening to The Winston Marshall Show with me, Winston Marshall.
Dave, thank you so much for having me in your studio. It's a real treat, and your team have been very kind to me. I'm very grateful indeed.
Winston, I'm freaking out. I've never sat in this chair before or seen the studio from this angle. This is like a whole other thing. You know, normally the camera's hitting me, I guess, on this side. Now it's hitting me on this side. I'm like a little crooked, but I'll do what I can.
Well, thank you. So I want to ask you about this Google Gemini AI scandal. I think that you are uniquely positioned to answer this. Now, your byline I've seen online is New York Times bestseller and TV personality, but actually, I think you're not giving yourself credit there. You're one of the pioneers of alternative media with being on YouTube now for, is it 10 years, longer?
I'm an OG YouTuber.
You're
an
OG YouTuber.
For whatever it's worth, yeah.
And also you have your tech companies. You co-founded Locals, which I want to understand about, learn about that. And also I understand that you're very involved with Rumble, the video platform. So
yeah.
I'd like to ask about that. So given that you have fingers in various AI pies, can you unpack and explain this Google Gemini AI scandal for me and my listeners?
First off, it's a good first question to start with because I'm just so sick of racehorse politics and what do you think of Trump and Biden said this and the rest of it. The 101 version of the Google Gemini thing, for people that aren't following the tech stuff too much or aren't following AI too much or anything else, is the idea that machine learning and that artificial intelligence, AI, was supposed to be a repository, really, for all human information. So anything that is spoken or said or written about or drawn or anything, eventually computers can compile all of this, and then you can create out of it. I mean, that was the dream of AI. So right now we're seeing the beginnings of it. So the simple version is sort of like ChatGPT, that you'd be able to put Winston Marshall, who is Winston Marshall, what is he good at, et cetera, et cetera. Has he said controversial things? And that you'd get an honest, that the machine has now learned enough about you through the sum totality, really, of the entire internet, and that it would be able to give you back something truthful. The cooler part than just text is what now we're starting to see with some AI-generated art and stories, where quite literally you're going to one day be able to say, create an episode of The Simpsons for me where Bart is 40 years old and Homer looks pink about, and it will write it for you. And here you can literally tell it what to do and it will write it for you. Now there's all sorts of ethical things involved there, and there's moral things. And what does that really do with art? There's a lot of sort of computer made art now, which is quite beautiful. You've probably seen these things on Instagram where people are like, you know, take me through the 1400s into the current day. And you see these incredible landscapes change and people change, all these things. And it's all done by a computer, and it's better than the human mind could do. Like, so we are on like the precipice of some really strange stuff in terms of, I know you guys are here doing, or at least partly participating in like a transhumanism conference. Like, we are on the...
Okay, I'm going to need to unpack that later, but yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Okay. Forget that part.
No, that's fine. Sorry, I interrupted.
All of this to say, we had the idea of AI was we were going to compile all this information and hopefully get something true back, whether it was information or then the ability to create art, create new things, all sorts of stuff. And then we'll have robot butlers and all of that. The controversy around Google Gemini is that what we've now realized, and what was interesting to me in this last week where this story has really burst forth, is that all these people are like, I'm so surprised. I can't believe that Google Gemini is so corrupt. And if you ask for, you know, pictures of the founding fathers of America, they show you, you know, pictures of four black women, you know, dressed up like they're George Washington, or just like these crazy things. Or it'll tell you that if you say, is it okay to be Asian? It'll say yes. If you say, is it okay to be black? It'll say yes. If you say, is it okay to be white? It gives you like a 5-paragraph long explanation of why that's problematic. People are shocked by this, how woke it became. And it's like, well, where have you guys all been for the last 20 years as we've watched algorithms be manipulated? And, you know this, you go, you search YouTube, and YouTube can push you in any which direction it wants to. You know, you're watching a Rubin Report video, so perhaps you like Dave Rubin or you like the things I'm talking about. Well, if they don't want you to focus too much on those ideas, they can put in your recommended bar a zillion other things to push you in different ways. Actually, right behind you, I have a framed picture from that's a New York Times cover page from about 7 years ago that it's talking about how the YouTube algorithm leads people to the alt-right. And they include people like me and Jordan Peterson and Milton Friedman, the award-winning or the Nobel winning libertarian economist. So the machine, we have all been fed lies, and these lies have now been compiled by machines, and now the machines are giving us back lies. And we are at a very, very strange precipice at the moment. And, you know, for people that are really tracking this, now Google has come out and said, boy, we didn't realize how bad this has gotten, and we're going to go in there and fix it. It might take us a few months. And Jordan Peterson had a great tweet about that. It's like, no, you guys cannot fix this. It was defrauded from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, Elon Musk has talked about, since he bought Twitter, the idea of fixing the coding there, who's been shadow banned and how they elevated some ideas and suppressed some other ideas. The codes have been written by hundreds, if not thousands, of people over the last 2 decades. To go in there and unfurl all that stuff is insane. So I'm not anti-technology by any stretch. I have an iPhone, all that stuff. I try to have an appropriate relationship with it, which I think that's one of the great challenges of modernity. How do we deal with technology in our own lives? But it is not surprising to me that Google Gemini is completely woke, that it's giving us exactly what these people who have wrecked so much of our societies, as we talk about on my show, it's just giving us back exactly what they want, and we should not be surprised by
that. Can I understand the mechanics of it? I don't know how much is in the public domain and how much we really know, but let's say ChatGPT, which was large language modeling, and they were scraping the internet, that everything that had been said up until 2 years before, I think, period is asked, and it uses that to compile its answers.
Yeah. And ChatGPT, by the way, is way cleaner. It's not perfect, and people were mocking it when it first started rolling out, but it is way cleaner and better than Google Gemini, for whatever reason.
Or maybe it'd be better articulated
or more
to
honest,
say that,
I should say,
that Google Gemini is way more corrupt because it was pretty bad. My experience with ChatGPT was pretty shocking.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's just, if you thought your experience with ChatGPT was shocking, Gemini is, corrupt is the right word.
So what is it, like you described, it's to do with the coding on Google Gemini? Why is it different, Google Gemini to ChatGPT?
So I don't know that anyone outside of Google actually knows the answer to that question. Are there engineers sourcing materials from specific places that are more in line with their values? So do they put more weight on if, say, Media Matters or a leftist organization writes something, say, about me, is that weighted more in their algorithm than, say, if, Fox News says something about me, for example? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that anyone knows what's exactly under the hood there, and that probably is by design too.
Mm-hmm. But there's been some sort of contrition from the head of
Google Gemini basically was like, boy, we didn't realize how bad this was. And then Elon tweeted at him and basically said Elon tweeted that he spoke to an insider over there who said they can clean it up in a couple months. And it's like, no, you can't. You can't, because it was designed this way. Mm-hmm. That's the point. You know, after the Twitter files were dumped and we learned how many people were shadow banned and that the government quite literally was colluding with Twitter and the other big tech companies to silence people, Jim Jordan, who's a congressman here from Ohio, he got the list of people that the government colluded with Twitter to silence. I was on the list.
Yeah.
I interviewed Jim Jordan at the Capitol. I said, well, what can I do? Do I get an apology letter from somebody? Can I sue him? He's like, no, they don't. There's nothing you can do. Yes, in fact, they trampled on my free speech rights. We know specifically it was a tweet that I had about COVID and mandates and boosters that were coming and all of this stuff. We know that the government was coordinating with Twitter. The tweet was deleted. That's an infringement on my ability to speak freely. That's the First Amendment. By the government mm-hmm. doing it. And there's just, you have no repercussions. And that they sort of prey on that. They're like, yeah, we do stuff and we keep getting away with it, so we'll keep doing it.
I'm keen to ask you about the Twitter files, because you were, in fact, one of the Twitter files journalists.
I was like the second round after that first burst with Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi.
Yeah. So I've interviewed a bunch of these people, Michael Schellenberger, Lee Fong, Jay Bhattacharya. It's one of my favorite topics. And now I appreciate that this is a couple of years old now. Maybe it's 14, 15 months old. But I what was your personal experience? You went to San Francisco to the Twitter headquarters?
I went to the Twitter headquarters. Well, I got a call at about 2 p.m. Eastern that Elon wanted to see me that day. And I scrambled. I called everybody, every rich person I knew. And I was like, does anyone have a plane I can get on to get over there? Anyway, I couldn't get any plane that quick. I ended up on the last. It was kind of funny. I was on the last row of the plane in a middle seat. And I thought, this is kind of funny. Like, I'm sitting right next to the bathroom in the middle seat, doesn't recline as I'm going to see the world's richest man. There's just something sort of poetic about that. I got to Twitter offices in San Francisco at about 10 p.m. or so. I walked in. He was in meetings in a glass office, so you could kind of see him there. And it's buzzing. It's 10 p.m. on like a Thursday night, and it's just buzzing. Like, there's just people in and out, and there's just a lot going on. Anyway, they were like, just hang around, and hopefully he'll get to see you in a little bit. At about midnight, he walks out, kind of bloodshot eyes, like it's been a long-ass day. This was just a little bit after he got Twitter. Maybe a couple of weeks, maybe 2 months at most, something like that. And he comes out and he says hi to me. We exchange a couple of pleasantries. And then he's like, so I want to know more about what's going on with your Twitter account, because we found some weird things. He's like, do you really need me to deal with this tonight? Because I'm tired. It's been a long day. And I thought, man, already I knew everything I needed to know about this guy. World's richest man. It's midnight. He's got bloodshot eyes. He's tired. He's getting hit in every which direction by the media and politicians. And he's basically saying to me, hey, you guy that I probably barely know, do you need me to stay late tonight? Like, I was like, wow, this guy is really something. And I was like, no, it's okay. You can go to bed. We'll pick it up tomorrow. And then I showed up the next day. I spent most of the day with some engineers there, and they were showing me, they have certain things that they can't show the public on how things work, which is related to anonymity and whatever else. But they were showing me how the whole system works. And basically the entire system was built to shadow ban. So when Jack Dorsey, who was the head of Twitter for a decade or so, he testified under oath that Twitter does not shadow ban. Complete lie. Now, he gets out of it because shadow ban, you can probably define it in several ways. But in essence, what we've all now known shadow banning to be is when you tweet something out, if it just is not seen by a certain sector of the public. They called it Connor, do you remember the line that they called shadow banning? They had a very Orwellian term for it, visibility filtering.
Yeah.
So that may be his way around lying to Congress. And by the way, you can lie to Congress and they don't do anything about it either. So it's just another one of those ways the government doesn't quite work. But in essence, spent hours with the programmers. They showed me all sorts of stuff. That they showed me how my tweets were deleted and then when my tweets were deleted, that then I would be put on a list so that my other tweets wouldn't be seen. So, and we all sort of knew this. Like there was a time if I tweeted anything, it would get 5,000 retweets and 10,000 likes, and suddenly things were getting 3 likes and no retweets. Like it was really very obvious that things were, you know, being put on the scale. And then I sat with Elon and we talked about it. He talked about all of the, you know, he at that time felt that not only did he have to fire half the employees at Twitter, which he eventually did, but also that he didn't know how many bad actors were still there, how many government moles were quite literally in the building, how many people that were secretly, you know, woke activists pretending to be just the average coder that might be taking him out from the inside. He was worried that somebody might be able to just pull the plug on the freaking thing. So the guy had like an incredible amount of stuff to deal with, but he sat with me and we looked at my account and he showed me some of the things. And what was really interesting about him was I already illustrated the sort of thoughtfulness part the night before, but he was funny. He was engaging. He was like enjoying the adventure of being in the fight. And I think that that's what the cool part is, you know. We see all of these billionaires that go to these World Economic Forum things and all these things, and they're all kind of miserable in a weird way, and they just want to figure out how to control everybody and figure out what you eat and how many times you can get on a plane. And here's a guy that's like really having fun with this. And, you know, there's a great video of him like laughing, talking about like the adventure of life and what the human spirit is supposed to accomplish. Like there's so many cool things for as screwy as everything feels right now. Like interplanetary travel is on the horizon, very likely in our lives, you know, if things work out the way they should. And who knows where it goes beyond there. Yeah, so there's so much that humans, you know, we think we're so advanced, and it's like, man, we've just scratched the surface of what really could be and what we could really know. And unfortunately, I think largely because of our political situation, we're just sort of locked right now in this very weird place.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things you uncovered with the Twitter Files and the other Twitter Files journalists was, like you described, the government collusion. What concerns me, and the government collusion to censor issues and how that affected the 2020 election. What concerns me about this Gemini situation is that Google is the search engine of the world. And actually, I don't know what it's the case in America, but in my country, in Britain, YouTube is now the number one search engine.
So that's interesting. So yeah. I think for us, it's Google number one, YouTube number two, but YouTube's owned by Google.
Exactly.
Right, that's the problem.
Exactly, it's the same problem. So what power do they have? If this is what their infrastructure is going at now, I wanted to ask for the Rubin report, have you experienced YouTube censorship?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Many, many, many times. When we first started and the show started picking up, so I was a lefty and I started talking about some of my frustrations with the left. This is pre, you know, the word woke. And I was saying that identity politics is a problem. You know, now it's all the stuff that everyone kind of knows now, but I happen to be on the early side of talking about it. The show started taking off, and then suddenly there would be like months where it was like our viewers were suddenly down 90%, and we would talk to people at YouTube. And I once got an email from YouTube. The engineer said he found a very strange bug on our channel. I have the email somewhere, and we responded to him, and then he was not employed at YouTube anymore. And we were told to just submit a standard service request. That's just one example. I mean, again, I'm never worried about the things that we know. We know that people get shadow banned. We know that people, the most obvious one is if you get banned outright, right? If they terminate your account, okay, it's obvious, you know what happens. I'm never worried about those. I'm always worried about the ways that we don't know we're being manipulated. Mm-hmm. So for anyone watching this on YouTube right now, you came here, hopefully you're subscribed to Winston's channel. Your expectation, if you click that bell saying, I want to be notified, the expectation is you're actually notified of the video. We know that works sometimes and doesn't work sometimes. But if the core ethos of YouTube is more aligned with the woke ideology, which it obviously is, we now see everything that Gemini is pumping out. If they don't want your channel to be successful, or if they know, boy, you know, people do like Winston, so they are going directly to his channel. We can't stop them from doing that yet. But what we can do is put in the recommended videos all videos that are counter to that. And they can do it in very complex ways. So you think, you're like, oh, I'm watching Dave Rubin and Winston Marshall. Like, okay, now there's a video. It's Jordan Peterson and Gad Saad. You click it and it's two people criticizing them. Like, there's all sorts of ways that we can be manipulated that we don't know that are, you know, the bots have now manipulated us into craziness, because half the time you have no idea if the people who like or retweet you are real people or bots, and they can create it creates an artificial air of validity. If you tweet something and it gets 10,000 retweets, you're like, boy, I really made a point there. Well, what if you found out that 9,000 of those things were just bots? That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is through comments. Some people's comments may be just disappearing on videos. Like, there's all sorts of, and it's not maybe, we know that these things are happening. The level with which they're happening is the part that we don't know. So we're in a true information war. We are in a Philip K. Dick sort of dystopian information war. I would say that's why it's cool that people like us have come together. And when I saw you in London not too long ago at the ARC conference, it was such a great reprieve from the lunacy of the world, because I spent, you know, we spent basically 4 days with, you know, a couple hundred people, but it was the 2 or 3 dozen people that I knew that have been in my world over these last couple of years who haven't gone completely insane. And we have a wide array of agreements and disagreements, but we're trying to make some sense of the world. And it gets harder to make sense of the world when it's one thing to make sense of the world in a normal time when you're debating right versus wrong or liberalism versus conservatism or something like that. But then when you throw the machines on top of it, you can see how this is, you end up in some sort of Terminator, you know, it doesn't mean the robots are going to be shooting us, although I think that's on the horizon too. I mean, there's every
involved in that as well.
Well, there's every reason to believe that will happen, because once we have humanoid robots, which, you know, they're basically here. Well, now what if you put that woke mind virus into them? How, and they become police officers? I mean, this is 20 years away, if that. Well, would they start treating people differently based on the color of their skin? They probably damn well would, because it would be in the programming. So these are things that Philip K. Dick wrote about. These are things that Isaac Asimov and great science fiction writers have been writing about. So point being, when you find a couple people that are trying to make some sense of the noise and haven't completely lost their mind, to me, it's like the most refreshing thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, look, that's 20 years in the future, but it's 2024. It's a US election year. What does this manipulation of Google mean for the election?
It's hard to tell, because we don't know exactly the level of the manipulation, but there is simply no doubt, and I would recommend that anyone watching this do a little cursory check for yourself, but if you were to Google Donald Trump right now and then Google Joe Biden right after, the variance in the results would be crazy. You are most likely, and I'm just ballparking the numbers here, but if you were to look at the top 20 search results on each of them, I guarantee you 18 of those 20 are going to be negative about Trump or about the trials and all of the craziness, and 2 might be remotely positive or sort of net zero, you know, one way or another. On Biden, it will be mostly positive. The economy is chugging along. There'll be nothing about dementia or any of the other things. Maybe 19 will be. And that in and of itself, it's just another way. Is that election interference? I suppose you could argue that either way. I would argue probably yes, to some extent. But this is now what we are all struggling with. I would also say that, you know, if you think about it, how old are you?
36.
36. So I'm 47. So I got a couple of years on you, but we're basically Gen Xers. You consider yourself a Gen Xer? Gen Zer? Just about. All right. You're on the lower side. But, you know, when we were growing up, or from an American perspective, when I was growing up, we had ABC News, NBC News, and CBS News. They were all on at 6:30 p.m. for a half hour. They basically had the same exact sponsors, and they covered pretty much the same stuff. So the Overton window was kind of like this. And you might go, all right, well, that's bad because we didn't have enough stuff being covered. We were ignoring too many voices. That's a fully valid opinion. And you basically only watched one or the other, depending on if you like the anchor or not. You watch CBS if you like Dan Rather. If you like Tom Brokaw, you watch NBC. If you like Peter Jennings, you watch ABC. That was pretty much it, because everything else was basically the same. Now, again, the width of that maybe should have been bigger, or the breadth of the information should have been bigger. But at that point, people only gave 22 minutes basically to the news per day, and maybe you picked up a newspaper or something else. What we've done now is we've completely blown apart the Overton window, so that now there's so much information, and I generally believe that more information is good, but we've so blown it apart that we can't agree on basic stuff out here. There are people out there. It's the predominant thought in sort of the cultural piece of America that a boy who's a little effeminate at 12 should at least consider undergoing gender transition surgery, which you can't transition your gender, but should literally mutilate their genitals and take hormone blockers. Like, that is psychotic. And everyone 20 years ago would have said it was psychotic. And yet all of this stuff has creeped in. So we're just being hit on every front. And to just quickly bring that to something we were talking about when we were in these reverse chairs, when you were talking about how you're worried about the state of England, I mean, look, when a society is just blown apart and there is no truth, it's the easiest for the authoritarians to come in and just, I will fix everything. Mm-hmm. We will fix everything. You guys have a major Islamism problem right now, which could really spread to non-Muslim people because they will be craving anything other than 2 + 2 = 5 and boys or girls and everything else. So you can see all of the seeds for a lot of bad stuff are, they're all being watered and fertilized right now. But that is why I live in the free state of Florida, which is not like that for many good reasons.
So what can be done about it? What is the alternative? Let's say for these search engines like YouTube and video platforms and Google, can they be recaptured? Is there anything legal that can be done?
There are some people that are a little more big government than me that want I think you can make some argument that maybe you could break up some of the products so that, you know, like Amazon, the part of Amazon that we all shop on, Amazon, maybe should be broken up from Amazon Web Services. That's like the underbelly of the internet. And you could do some sort of breakup of the company. I'm not a big government guy, so the idea that the government's going to come in and break up a company and that will separate the power so that the purchase, you know, all the stuff that you buy on Amazon has nothing to do with whether you can be on the internet, Amazon.
Well, there's good history in America of that, the antitrust laws and breaking up America.
Right, North. So some of it works. And people can make good arguments on some of this. I think David Sachs, who's one of the few sane tech billionaires, I think he's made some good arguments in that case. It's just not my general position. I try, like, the idea that the government can fix anything at this point, I think the government is the source of most of the problems. Mm-hmm. So I would rather just other things be created. I mean, build new things. That's why I started Locals. I think Rumble is, not I think, I know Rumble is creating not only a YouTube alternative, but an Amazon AWS alternative. So if you remember after January 6th, remember they said that Parler was where, which was like the Twitter alternative, that they said that's where they're all coordinating. And it was run on Amazon infrastructure. Amazon literally just, I don't know if they click a button or it's a swipe or whatever it is, but one guy just tapped something and it blew apart the entire website. They had something like 20 million unique users, and it was blown up overnight. That's whether you liked Parler or not. I wasn't on Parler, but whether you liked it or not, that is an incredible amount of power that Amazon has, on top of the power that it has because it knows every single thing that you eat and what product you put in your hair and what size your underwear is.
Yeah.
Is the government the right answer to solve that? To me, it's human ingenuity that will solve it. Yeah. So I'd want more decentralized platforms. I'd want more open sourcing so that we know if the algorithms are being manipulated in some fashion, which it's a funny way to talk about it, because algorithms have to be manipulated in some way. They're ordering information. There has to be something. So you have all the information coming in. The algorithm has to order it. Otherwise, when you were to search something, you could search coffee cup. If there was no algorithm, it would just be an endless wasteland of insanity. Mm-hmm. So you need something to order information. Mm-hmm. The problem is we don't know what the filters and what the pressures are on that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it can be. Look, let's put it this way. We had the Twitter files. We learned an awful lot of stuff about Twitter, right? Where are the YouTube files? Where are the Google files? Where are the Facebook files? Do you not think it was happening at these companies? Jen Psaki, who was White House press secretary, she admitted at the height of COVID that they have contact with Facebook regarding problematic posts. So they were telling us that they were censoring us, which, by the way, when the government works with a company against the people, that is quite literally fascism, not exactly. Fascism the way they're always telling us.
Good old-fashioned Italian
fascism. It's real fascism. Yeah. So I am not hopeful that they will fix themselves. Google Gemini I will never put it on my phone. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't think that YouTube will ever truly be corrected, but I'm still on YouTube. Rumble is my main home, and I know I'm going to be okay over there. But it's really about building new things, whether they're decentralized, whether they're open source, some level of transparency. People don't mind being it's sort of like people don't mind being messed with to some extent because we've got a lot of things in our day that we're doing. But it's like being abused over and over, I think, is a bit much. And I think that this Gemini thing really has shown people how corrupt this whole thing is.
So I'm keen to ask about Rumble and Locals. But first, can I ask about Elon? Because he seems to be sort of one of the guys building and building alternatives. Are you concerned that let's say a company like X, which wants to be the everything app, we're just creating an alternative monopoly app that if Elon, something happens to him, it can go into the wrong hands or in the same situation all over again.
Yeah, it's the problem with centralized systems, right? So he turned Twitter into X, and he wants X to be more like WeChat, which is what they have in China, actually, which in a way is very dangerous for the points you just laid out. You'll make your phone calls on there. You do financial transactions on there. It'll be your hub of social media. It's where your social credit score will be. So there is a problem there. Look, if it turns out that Elon is the evil genius on all of this, then man, he really pulled the wool in front of all of our eyes. I do not think that with him. I really don't. But your question is a good one. Is there a risk of that he will build all of this into something, let's say, really elegant and great, and he does it for the right reasons? He gets the government comes after him, or he passes away, or whatever it might be. And now the amount of data and control that this thing has over our lives is controlled by someone else. That is a huge problem. It's why one of the reasons that when we created Locals, we said, all right, if you're on Locals, if you're a creator on Locals, you own all the stuff. Because we felt, and it's portable, by the way, you can take it wherever you want to go with it. So, that's just one example of how you can unfurl some of these problems. But yes, there is an issue there for sure.
About Elon being evil. Yeah. Coincidentally, one of the things that had been busted on Google Gemini was that someone had said, who is worse for humanity, Hitler or Elon? And it genuinely made the case that Elon might be, which is absurd. Now, for Locals, for people who are not on Locals, this is a company that you co-founded, you built. Can you explain? Tell me.
Basically, all I wanted to do was create a subscription service that would not be so beholden to big tech. It actually started after one of your countrymen, Carl Benjamin, who's known as Sargon of Akkad online. He was one of the first sort of outspoken classical liberals online. So when I started talking about classical liberalism a little bit more and individual rights and things like that, and I was thought of as a progressive at that time, people were like, oh, you've got to talk to Carl. They were calling him Carl Benjamin. They were calling him Sargon of Akkad. Anyway, he was on Patreon, so he was funding his show through Patreon. So it's a monthly subscription network. So whatever you create online, people can donate a couple bucks to you. He got kicked off because he said the N-word, not on Patreon itself, not on his show, which he was funding through Patreon, but on someone else's channel. And he didn't say it to be racist. He was making fun of the type of people that say it. Anyway, Patreon just blew up his account overnight. They took away his livelihood. That's where he was making most of his money. He's got kids and a wife and family and people to support and all that. And I was on tour with Jordan Peterson at the time, and we discussed it, and we said, we were both on Patreon. I was making probably 90% of my company's rev was coming through Patreon. Jordan was on there. It was a significantly less portion for him, but the idea, the principle was important. And we both said we were going to leave. I built, along with my brother-in-law, who's a tech guy, we built, it wasn't even called Locals at the time. We were just trying to build a subscription network just for me. And once we built it, we were like, holy cow, this is good. And it's right. And more people than you can just use it. And that's ultimately what became Locals. We eventually merged with Rumble. So we're the subscription portion of Rumble, but without doing too much of commercial, if you're a creator of any kind online, we allow you to own the email addresses. You have direct push notifications to your people. Our live streaming is as good as Instagram. We want, in terms of free speech, we thought, okay, so how can we deal with all of this? Well, first off, when you have a subscription model, if you literally charge 50 cents a month, you've taken 99% of the bad actors out because they don't want to associate a credit card. Yeah. They don't want to pay to troll you. So first off, you've eliminated literally 99%. Now with the remaining 1%, we were like, all right, well, what do we do about that? Well, the way we deal with it is the same way I deal with free speech as a human being. You can say anything you want to me outside of my house, but I don't invite everyone into my house to say what they want about me. And that's how we deal with Locals. So if you decide You are going to join the Rubin Report community on Locals. Pay your $5 a month to just call me an asshole all day. I can kick you out, but I can't kick you off the platform. I can just kick you out of my community. You're welcome to be in anyone else's community on Locals. And that, I feel like...
That's you as a Locals host, me as exactly. As the Locals
not the platform.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, if you run around and you join 20 communities and you're being awful to everybody, every one of those 20 people can kick you out, but you will not lose your Locals account. You're only going to lose your Locals account if you do something that's against the laws of the United States, but then you've got a much bigger problem than Locals.
Has that happened?
Not that I know of. Uh-huh. Not that I know of. And I've been on there now. We created about 6 years ago. I've kicked one person out of my community in 6 years.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So you actually... Everything you
so that is
say,
the answer
actually,
to your previous yeah, question. Actually, build new you're things. Doing,
and it's the case. It's not just, by the way, in tech. It applies to all industries, like the music industry, where I'm from, publishing, whatever it is. If it is indeed true that the market doesn't care about this woke nonsense, or indeed the market doesn't want to be censored, then you can build new institutions, you can build new companies,
yeah.
And you can make money.
Well, I think you'll appreciate this part. What I learned, you know, it's sort of like when you do things that... In a weird way, naivete is the only thing that will allow you to do it at the beginning. Like if I had realized how hard it was, obviously it's worked out for me in the end. But for the years that I spent fundraising for Locals, going to meetings, traveling all over the place to try to get more people involved and talking major board meetings all over the place, I was spending at the height in some ways of like the IDW and all the intellectual dark web and all that. Most of my days was spent fundraising and building Locals, actually, which I never intended to be a tech guy. It was only the naivete of like, well, I was like, well, there's a problem here. Why doesn't anyone solve the problem? And I would tell people the idea and everybody would be like, that's a great problem, or that you have a great solution to the problem. And what I realized was the cowardice level was incredible, because I talked to billionaires, like well-known billionaires, who I'm not going to throw under the bus on this, who wouldn't put in a dime. They were like, yeah, it all makes sense. The tech makes sense. The idea makes sense. But it's free speech. I don't want to get related to that. You get called right wing and da 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 da. And I mentioned David Sacks earlier. He was the one that really helped us light this thing on fire, because we had a couple random investors. And then I met David Sacks one night by total coincidence. He introduced himself to me. I didn't even know who he was. It was only 2 or 3 days later that someone told me who I was talking to. And I called him up after that. And I said, hey, I'm building this thing and you might be interested. I had one meeting with him for about 5, maybe 10 minutes. He asked for some data. We got it to him the next day and he wrote us a massive check. And then when he did that, then about 10 other huge founders from Silicon Valley came in. Mm-hmm. And the point of all of that is that it just takes one brave guy to be like, yeah, there's a good idea here. Let me get involved. And then suddenly everyone else was in. So I had all of these meetings for years, long ass board meetings. You follow up with documents, then they want more questions and all this bullshit. And then nothing ever happens with it and they don't even respond to you.
Yeah.
And if you just meet the one guy who's just like, yeah, I see something here. Let's see what we can do. And I'll be a little bit brave too. And then that bravery begets bravery. And I think it also begets good products and good societies.
Mm. So then what's the story with Rumble? Because did they buy?
Yeah. So then Rumble came along and we knew they were the sort of YouTube alternative. We did a couple little light partnerships with them trying to figure out things. And then one day, it was the first time I met him. It was the CEO of Rumble, Chris Pavlovsky. We had dinner with him and my brother-in-law and he sat down, and as the waiter was pouring the water, so, I mean, we were at the table for 30 seconds. He's like, I want to merge with you guys. Let's figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And he laid out exactly how it would work. And
can you explain to me why Rumble is different to YouTube? Now, I do use Rumble, but it's for listeners who don't know. What's the fundamental difference between Rumble and YouTube?
Well, on the free speech front, which I think is most important for your listeners, we're not censoring people. I mean, we've got a lot of people there that don't like Dave Rubin that say all sorts of mean things about me. I'm not calling anybody to say, make sure these people get off the platform. You can talk about COVID. You can talk about election stuff. You can talk. And again, if you're breaking the laws of the United States, you have a bigger problem than us. So I'm not saying it's perfect. We are doing everything possible as it relates to free speech to make sure that creators can be on there. People say crazy things in the chat, and we, for the most part, we let it be. It's as liberal in a good sense of liberalism as the speech policies can possibly be. But the real secret behind Rumble is that we are building the infrastructure to go against Amazon AWS. So it's one thing to have the YouTube competitor, which obviously is needed. But the Amazon AWS, which again, it's Amazon Web Services, that's what runs the internet. I don't know what percentage of the internet is run on Amazon AWS, but it's like a huge, huge percentage. And they can just get rid of you, as I told you that Parler story before. We're now running cloud technology to compete with that. And I think that really could be the thing that saves the internet.
What's the difference between the algorithm structure on Rumble and on YouTube?
Well, I don't know. I don't know because I don't know the algorithm structure on YouTube. And I've met with the YouTube CEO, and it was only because I applied so much public pressure on her that she had to take a meeting with me. And she was definitely not happy to take a meeting with me. And they had a lawyer in there and somebody that was typing out every word I said. And it was an extremely tense meeting. And they were very not happy that I was there. And it was clear I wasn't allowed to take a picture with her or anything else, even though every trans whack job can walk in there and take a picture with her and everything else. So I can't answer the question because I don't know what their algorithm is. I also personally
that we're being look again back to 2024 election.
Yeah,
and we've talked about how YouTube and Google can manipulate people.
Yeah,
Rumble, we don't know exactly how it's.
I could, and I'd be happy to do it to connect you with an engineer answer that question more appropriately. But I know that they are not manipulating results because of political bias. You need an algorithm to organize something because otherwise search results have to come out in some sort of order for the human brain to process them. Like otherwise you're just barfing out stuff.
Right.
And there it is. So there is an algorithm, obviously, but it's not served up with political bias. That's the point.
So there's still a danger of, you know, your YouTube echo chamber or like a Rumble echo chamber, but it's not the same problems.
Look, it's funny. The echo chamber thing to me is like, I'm not so worried about echo chambers anymore because I used to be worried about it. And that was a lot of people would say, well, Dave, you're only putting on these people who are anti-woke and whatever. And first off, it's hard to get a lot of these people, a lot of the other ones to talk to me. I just did a series of interviews in DC. I could not get one Democrat to talk to me. I can talk to every single Republican. I treat all of my guests the same. I am not known as being the most hardcore interviewer. I like to just kind of just do what we just did a moment ago and just get to know somebody and go from there. I would treat a Democrat with the exact same respect I would treat a Republican, but I can't get any of them. But in terms of the echo chamber, I'm actually more interested now in talking about people who are going to do the exact things that we're talking about here, meaning build new things, whether it's literally build new societies or build new tech or build new robots or build new roads or build new schools. That is way more interesting. By the way, all the people that are going to do those things, they are somewhat like-minded. I would say they almost all of them mostly come out of the classical liberal tradition. Some of them are a little more conservative, let's say, when it comes to religion or some of the social issues. But by and large, if that's what an echo chamber is, then at the moment, I'm really quite content being in that echo chamber.
I do think that there's some responsibility on individuals to break their own echo chambers, to go and follow the people that they don't follow. It's not really the responsibility of the platforms themselves. Can we switch gears a little bit? I'm going to just hopefully try and tie this together with the earlier parts of this conversation, again, bringing it back to the 2024 election. So,
That's where we were. Yes.
No, we're screwed. We touched there.
Okay.
But so there's been a recent Politico article saying 18 people from American security services are very concerned about Trump, who's come out and said or suggested, I don't know if it's been private or publicly, that he's going to try and dismantle the secret services and those working against him. You'll remember the Steele dossier, which has now been largely debunked, or the Hunter Biden issue, which the FBI pre-bunked. And this is something that Vivek Ramaswamy is also being saying, you know, trying to sort out all of these agencies who are getting in the way of democracy and getting in the way of the president. And I think this applies because it's part of the larger picture, let's say, referring to Twitter files, of government agencies and everyone getting involved and in the democratic process. So can anything actually be done about this? Could Vivek really, all the things he said about taking this stuff apart, could he have done it? And Trump, can he really, does he have even the will to do it? Like he talked about draining the swamp before the 2016 election. He didn't drain the swamp.
No, the swamp drained him. I mean, I think I don't like being too black-pilled, because I think if you're too black-pilled, you just don't know how to get up in the morning. And it would be very hard to do what we do for a living, because I want to talk about these things in a way that gives people enough hope to get out there and do their own thing. But to directly answer your question, like, I don't think Donald Trump could do it. I don't think Vivek Ramaswamy can do it. I think that, let's say Donald Trump becomes president again, which I think is certainly 50-50, like, to not be...
the polls are slightly in his favor. But it's a long time way to go. And
I'm never a huge fan of polls. God only knows what, you know, will happen before the election and who will he even be running against, because Biden is hanging on by a thread and everything else. But can Trump get enough... Even if, let's just say it's a worthy fight, that the agencies have to be hacked away at a bit, and that they've manipulated things too much, and you can even argue that they at least to some extent instigated January 6th or exacerbated it. So let's say I'm on board all of that. The idea that Trump at this point can hire enough good, competent people without leaks to have an airtight administration that can do all this stuff is complete fiction to me. Mm-hmm. That's just a sad reality, actually, because I don't have Trump derangement syndrome. I very publicly supported him and took the swings for it last time. I think DeSantis was a much better choice this time, although I'm very happy that he'll remain the governor here, because I'm very bullish on the state of Florida and I'm less bullish on the country, unfortunately. But to do what Trump is saying you would have to do, you need the best of the best around you. Now, to me, one of my main arguments for DeSantis was like, well, not only does the guy have an incredible track record, but I think a lot of great people will want to work for him. I think he could bring Elon Musk into the Oval Office, help me on the tech side on how we deal with some of this stuff. I think he could have got the best law people in, the best legal minds, I think the best law enforcement people. Like, I think he could have done that. Trump, in that part of what people like about him is that he fights with everybody and turns on everybody. I don't know who wants to work with him. Whoever he's going to get as VP, knowing that he turned on Mike Pence last time. Now, you might argue Pence turned on him. But the point is, everyone he ever, whether it's Chris Ray or Bill Barr or any of these guys, they end up being idiots and sellouts and morons. And it's like, well, you did hire all of them. That's just the truth. So the idea that he can somehow go in and fix it, it's like, okay, that might be a nice idea. I actually do think it's a nice idea, but you got to have incredible, serious people. That's what it would be. You need incredible, serious, effective people to do those things. I don't think he can get those people.
If Trump, let's say he's even nominated, but let's say he goes on to win the election, which is not out of the question. You say, there's a million things that could go on between now and the election. I think back to when he was last president. We discussed this a little bit when I was on your show. Our seats were reversed. And I think this applies also to a lot of what we've been talking about. Not only what was discovered in the Twitter files, but all of these social media and internet companies, tech companies, but also what's happening in the agencies. But I would go further, and we discussed this on your show, all of the BLM stuff, the Antifa stuff, what's going on with DEI across universities and various industries. Me too. I think that a lot of that was a reaction to Trump. Maybe it had been slowly ticking along for a while, but Trump's presidency turbocharged that long march for the institutions, as it's called. If Trump becomes president again, can America survive? Will that not all come back with a vengeance? And can America survive that?
Yes.
It's not even Trump necessarily, it's the reaction to Trump. Can America survive the reaction to Trump?
You know, it's interesting because people get bored now when I talk about DeSantis because he's out. And again, I'm happy that he's the governor here. But he truly defeated Disney in his fight against the woke. He took away their special privileges. He took away all of the advantages that they had, that places that their competition like SeaWorld and Universal Studios didn't have. He did it. He removed DEI from our educational institutions. Florida used to be a joke.
So what did he do with Disney?
So with Disney, they had all of these special exemptions that they had set up literally decades ago. And then the whole company was going woke. They were putting a lot of money into woke stuff throughout Florida and, of course, across the country.
Is this for the adventure playground, the park?
For Disneyland. Disneyland in Orlando, they had special exemptions. They had their own police force and fire department, tax benefits. I think they had their own airline or air strip, if I'm not mistaken. There was a series of advantages that they had been grandfathered into over years. And he was like, no, you guys are pushing this crap on us and we are going to take this stuff away. He won. he won. He did it effectively because he was able to do it. So the question related to Trump, as I said before, is can he fix any of these things? That's number one. But your question now is, okay, let's say Trump gets in, and let's say he even brings in a whole bunch of decent people. What is going to be the bananas reaction of the other side? And will they just burn it all down again? Is the explosion of DEI and wokeness just the sort of polar opposite reaction of Trump? I think it is, probably. I think it is. And he gives them so much fuel to go crazy, to burn everything down with. So I don't see how Joe Biden or Donald Trump get us out of this. They are too old. They are too corrupt, each in their own way. I would say Joe Biden's far more corrupt in a lot of senses than Donald Trump. I think that even for whatever pieces of good there are with Trump, It's messy now. It's going to create, like, things will not be better on the other side. Mm. I would say RFK is the one that probably presents the better option. I don't think the system will ever allow him in, which is pretty twisted, especially when you take his last name in there. But in terms of providing what is a better vision for the future of America that is more in line with the founders, that is more in line with a good, transparent society, I think he captures more of that. At the moment, you know, he's running as an independent, which means you're not even on the ballot. So that's a problem amongst a series of other problems.
What do you think separates him from the other two? Like, what key policy that you particularly like about him?
Key policy? Well, first I would say it's the ethos first. I mean, if you listen to him, he's really trying to bridge the divide. And I don't think that most Americans are the fringe. I really don't. Yes, we have our out of control Marxists and progressive whack jobs and everything else. But most people, especially in light of what we've now seen between riots and stores being broken into and the homelessness and everything, most people are not into progressive policies. But the Democrat Party just kind of went that direction. You guys have your own version of this with your Labor Party that used to be somewhat center left, but then went really bananas with Corbyn. And I guess maybe they've come back a little bit, as I understand it. And most people aren't far right in that they don't want America to be some white nationalist country or something like that. Most people, let's put it this way, most people are 1995 America. If you could just reverse the clock, get me some plutonium and 1.21 gigawatts and all that and a DeLorean, if we could go back to 1995 America, nobody thought it was cool to be racist. Nobody thought it was cool to hate gay people. Nobody thought it was okay to just shut down a bridge because you're supporting terrorism across the world. Like, we had it right. We really did. We had so cleaned the house that people didn't know what to do with themselves. So they started going, holy shit, there's a dust bunny in the corner. I better get the flamethrower out. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we've done in this country. And I think largely this is going in a completely other direction, but I think unfortunately what happened is that the gay rights movement, which was just when it was for equality, meaning two people love each other and they'd like to enter a relationship enter a contract, let's say, that allows them to have the equal benefits that another people can have. We have individual rights and we have equality of opportunity here and all of those things. I think that was just, but the activists didn't know when to let go. So overnight, it basically morphed into trans stuff, and then it pushed into all of this children's stuff and a whole bunch of other wacky things. But otherwise, we had done it. We had done it right in America, and now I think very fondly of 1995. It was all pretty much right. It really was.
Except not the gay rights yet in 1995.
No, right. So not that. But I think you could make an argument that it was in a bizarre way, in some ways, and this is definitely going to get clipped and quoted and misquoted, but in a bizarre sense, although obviously the gay marriage fight was right, of course, that in some ways it was better for gays back then because you could just live your life and it really wasn't this controversial thing. Yes, there was a religious right that wasn't thrilled with you or whatever else, but they weren't jailing gays or anything else. It wasn't the 1970s anymore where gay people had to meet at underground clubs and all of that. Like, it was basically okay in the culture and people had whatever relations they had. Again, it's a just movement for equality, but now it's burst forth into something that is completely insane. And it has, if you took the average gay rights activist of 1980, who was at Stonewall and they were fighting because the AIDS crisis and because they were being arrested at clubs and all those things. If you would have ever said to that, if that person was still alive right now, and you said to them, by the way, your movement for equality, just so that you could go to a bar that didn't have the windows blacked out, that was an underground speakeasy, and so that, you know, the government would treat you okay related to AIDS or whatever, if you would say to them, actually, in 2024, your movement is now going to be about taking little gay boys, because mostly what this is, it's gay conversion therapy. If this was in a Muslim nation, we'd be calling it gay conversion therapy. They're taking effeminate 12-year-old boys and telling them that they're girls and chopping off their genitals. If a Muslim nation was doing this, we'd be calling it the most barbaric thing possible. We do it in the name of progressivism.
Muslim nations are doing it with women, by the way.
They are doing it. Yes, yeah. They are largely.
We do call it barbaric.
And by the way, they're doing it with men. I mean, in Iran, I think Iran has the most transgender men because they'd rather them live as women than as men being with men. So there's many layers to this, but the point is most of these activist things go way, way off the rails. The fight for equality is where things are supposed to end. And we, unfortunately, the left never knows. The left just wants to progress. But if you want to just progress into the chasm, congratulations. I just don't want to go off the car into the chasm with them.
The same thing's happened in Britain, by the way. As soon as gay marriage was legalized, almost the next day, they added the T to the LGB. Yeah. And all of these activists for organizations like Stonewall, they were out of a job. So that's why they added the T. And that's why.
By the way, you are a straight man. I happen to be gay. I have nothing more in common with a trans person than you do. These letters have nothing to do with each other. I don't know what it's like to live my life in a body that I don't think I'm supposed to be in. There's a difference between sexual.
There's nothing to do with the T and the LGBT.
No, they have nothing to do. I have no more insight into the mind of a lesbian than you do. You might have. You've probably had more.
Well, there's even more than that because.
Lesbian.
That's for another show.
Yeah, there we go. There, yeah.
But for the trans, LGB, at least it's a sexuality.
Right.
The vast majority of trans, now there is autogynephilia, so there is an aspect of trans which is a sexuality, but the vast majority of T has got nothing to do with sexual preference.
No.
So it's totally absurd that they would put those together.
And by the way, most people, again, when I talk about that wide swath of people, most people don't care. If you are an adult and you wish to dress a certain way and put on lipstick or do whatever, right? Most people don't care. And if you treat them with respect, they'll treat you with respect. Unfortunately, again, what the activists did was they said, well, that's not good enough. We've got to teach kids about it and confuse them and a whole bunch of other stuff. That's the thing that pushes people too far.
The thing that's shocking, and I hope you don't mind me getting to the personal, is that you're a gay married man with kids.
Yes,
and
yeah.
You would.
My God,
you're looking back.
You know what? That's not the shocking thing. Looks like
that's not the shocking thing to me.
Change diapers. And,
sorry, but you've just said to me that you would rather have lived in 1995 when you can't get married and you don't have those same rights than living.
Well, no, I don't know that I quite said that I would rather live in it. The fight for equality, the fight for true equality under the law, which is the promise of the United States of America and equal rights for everybody, is a just fight. So gay marriage, I think. Was it 2015, 2016 or so? I think that was right. And then it should have wrapped up. And you just explained why the activists in your country did the exact same thing. I just think that the mind of America, the collective mind of America was better in 1995. It was healthier than it is now. Mm. So that is not to say we should reverse the march for equal rights. Obviously, I'm just talking sort of holistically about how we sort of thought about ourselves and people in the country was way better in 1995 than now.
So make America 1995 again.
Basically, yeah. I think a lot of people would get on board that.
You could
watch a sports game and not be lectured about racism. It was pretty good.
We have the same problem in Britain if you go now. They're still taking the knee before games. So the last, I went to a game of Boxing Day, still 4 years on from the BLM riots. It's still the same thing.
Yeah.
Can you paint me a picture of, we've touched on this a little bit, how October 7th has affected America and how it's, I guess, what's, has it affected your politics? I think you're like me, you're a Zionist and a Jewish man who I've seen a lot of the stuff that's been coming out, not least what happened in Harvard and the universities with Claudine Gay. How's that affecting America? What picture can you paint for me?
Yeah. Well, first off, the word Zionist, it's like they're using the word Zionist to make it sound like it's something bad. It's just that the Jewish people have a right to self-determination like all other people, that the Jewish people have a right and I would say it's a God-given right to the ancient land of Israel, where a guy by the name, you don't have to be Jewish to believe that, a guy by the name of Jesus of Nazareth, which is in what we now call the West Bank, which used to be known as Judea and Samaria, Judea where the Jews were from, to disconnect the Jewish people from that land is to disconnect everything that Western society is based on. Because once you disconnect the Jews from Israel, you've basically obliterated Christianity's connection. And once you've basically obliterated obliterated Christianity's connection, then all of our Western nations have no right being anywhere. So I have to say that I'm not, I guess the one thing that surprised me, like I'm not surprised by like people hate the Jews or a certain set of people hate the Jews, or there's, you know, a lot of it's rooted in jealousy, and it's the obvious end outcome of wokeism, right? Like the idea that some people, wait a minute, an oppressed group, a group that's a minority that has had been pogromed and holocausted and Spanish Inquisition, all this horrible shit's happened to them. And somehow by and large, they've still become successful and they've still maintained their culture and traditions and all these things. It does not fit with the intersectional calculator. So I'm not surprised at how many people, let's say, hate Israel or hate Jews or have tried to turn Zionism into a dirty word or something like that. I think what I'm surprised by to some extent, although I guess it shouldn't surprise me, is that there was about 24 hours where Israel had worldwide sympathy. And then the second they decided, okay, we have to save our people right now, which is, it's the whole purpose of a nation state, mm-hmm. is to protect your people. They have every right to do whatever they want. That actually is the real truth. No other country would do any of the things that they've done. I mean, your country, my country, would not. For the first half of the previous century, your country did all sorts of military adventures all over the world. A lot of people died, all sorts of stuff. We've made a lot of mistakes, Iraq war, blah, blah, blah. But they're doing something that's in their backyard with their people right there. Mm. They have they're dropping leaflets. They're sending text messages. Please, you've got a rocket launcher in your mosque. Could you get out of there so we can bomb it? You can go back. It's insane, but it's shown this bizarre double standard that only has arisen out of wokeism. I think I saw this early on. I always saw when I was a progressive, there was this weird hatred of Jews. There was a weird hatred of Israel, which obviously is just a hatred of Jews. Israel is the size of New Jersey. In the roughest neighborhood in the entire world, there are something like 40 Arab Muslim nations. There are probably at least 50 Christian nations. There's one tiny country with Jews as the majority. And there's an obsession by the UN and large parts of the world to hate that place. So it's just the world's oldest hatred. That's all it is. I would say that the smart thing for the Jews at this point and the Israelis would just, it is what it is. It is what it is. They're going to, you know, and by the way, it's not most people. I think that's, it's hard to calculate. Like it feels like you look at these videos out of London and you see hundreds of thousands of what I would call basically your jihadis or Hamas supporters or whatever. You see them out there and it feels like it's all of Britain. It's not all of Britain.
No.
As we talked about on your show, it's like too many people are quiet. So you see the extremes just sort of running around rampant. That's been disappointing. It's disappointing to see that good people don't stand up. I forget who it was that said, you know, all evil needs to flourish. It's good people to do nothing. I mean, I think that that's what we've sort of seen here. But I would say Israel is going to do what they have to do. And it's not that they have a right to do it. They have a duty to do it. Otherwise, there's no purpose of them being there at all. Mm-hmm. So they have to do it. And
they have to get their hostages back at the very least.
Yeah.
Back to the 2024 election, maybe this is a way we can wrap up the conversation. It seems to me that one thing that Trump should be credited for was his massive path towards peace when it came to Israel. Specifically, I'm of course referring to the Abraham Accords.
Yeah.
Biden has shifted back to what seems like the Obama, Iran-centric worldview. Of course, there's the Iran deal under Obama. And just before the October 7th, or I think maybe a couple of months before, there was $6 billion worth of
funds. It was about 2 weeks before.
2 weeks before in South Korea that was given unfrozen so that Iran could have it back. That worldview, for me, I'd also add that under Obama, I think there were two Hamas conflicts, zero under Trump, although there were complications, to say the least, around the moving of the embassy to
Jerusalem. But nothing really happened. I mean, everyone was telling us it was going to be World War III. That, if you were paying attention to our media, Trump's moving the embassy to Jerusalem, which is the capital of Israel, it's going to cause World War III. Basically, there was nothing happened. I think there was like two people killed in Pakistan or something. I mean, basically nothing happened.
Well, one of the lessons seemed to be in that period that, oh, actually, maybe people are tired of the Palestinian cause. Well, you couldn't say that anymore.
Yeah.
Because the Arab nations, they are absolutely protesting and rioting what's going on.
The Arabs don't give a shit about the Palestinians. The Arabs, actually, if you want to go to an apartheid nation, you should go to Lebanon or to Jordan. Jordan, which is mostly a Palestinian populace, which is run by the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordans. The king is running. You're not allowed to have certain jobs if you're Palestinian in Jordan. They don't have that in Israel. Israel, every single sign, every road sign in every single part of Israel is in three languages, Hebrew, Arabic, and English. That's some strange apartheid there. If you want an apartheid nation, go to Lebanon, where Palestinians are not allowed to be lawyers or doctors, a series of other jobs. People are welcome to fact check any of this. No, the reason that people pretend to care about the Palestinians is it's just a way of getting the Jews. Nobody cares about the Palestinians. Palestinians have had at least six offers for states. They've rejected all of them. There never was a Palestinian state. And for people that upsets, tell me who the president was, who was the prime minister. If you look at the Palestinian national soccer team from the 1930s, they were all Jews. The Arabs used to boycott Palestine. It was the mandate, the British mandate of Palestine, because it was the Jews that lived there. So they didn't want them to buy goods from Palestine. It wasn't because they were boycotting Arab Muslims. It was because they were boycotting Jews. It's so funny because now people say it's 75 years of a brutal occupation. Boy, apparently you guys want the British Empire back, because it was the British Empire. And before that, it was the Ottomans. And we can do this all the way back for thousands and thousands of years. This has nothing to do with anything. And there might be some deep existential biblical reason for it. This has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that the Jews are there, period.
So back to then Biden versus Trump. Do you have any faith that the Abraham Accords can be brought back
not under Biden?
Well, Biden have forbade the mention of the Abraham Accords when he came into office. But let's say, would that not be for you a vote for Trump, because the Abraham Accords?
Oh yeah, I'm going to vote. If the choices are Trump or Biden, I'm voting for Trump. I mean, it's not even a question. There's no way in high hell I'm voting for Biden. First off, I don't know how anyone in their right mind can vote for Biden, because you don't know who you're voting for. We don't know who's running the show, and you don't know who's about to replace him, right? Like, so there's a lot of that, right? You just have no freaking idea. That's one thing. Biden has been an unbelievably horrible president for almost every reason, including the fact that we don't really know who's president. I mean, that's just true. If anyone watching this honestly thinking that Joe Biden is the driving intellectual force behind all of these things happening,
who do you think he is?
I mean, it's probably the leftovers from the Obama administration, something like that. It's probably even more nefarious than that, I would say. But Biden is just a body.
Is it Obama? Could it be? You just don't know.
Yeah, it kind of could be. Yeah, it kind of could be Obama working through Susan Rice or something like that. But that's all sort of exploratory. We can think about it and wonder about it. But Biden has been even since October 7th. Yes, he said a couple of the right things. But on the other hand, every other day he gets out there and says that Israel's killing indiscriminately, or just lies that they know are lies. A guy who his entire career, I'm the best friend Israel ever had. They're talking about a two-state solution. There's never been two states. I've never been for the two-state solution. And by the way, it's not even a two-state solution. It's a three-state solution, because Gaza and the West Bank are not connected. So unless you're putting a road between them to connect the states, which would intersect Israel, is completely fucking bananas. So they lie about everything. And we have no idea who, once Biden kicks over, how much more radical they're about to become. I think what sits underneath whatever veneer of decency is left with the Democrats is probably something much more dangerous, closer to Corbyn in your country.
The question I'm asking myself is, can the world survive another 4 years of Biden? You've got what I call the Biden hat trick of the disastrous Afghanistan pullout, Ukraine, which I think wouldn't have happened if...
No, it wouldn't. Because it didn't happen under Trump.
Right. And then this Hamas conflict. But then on the other hand, as I mentioned earlier in this conversation, can America survive the counter-protest to Trump? So that seems to be...
That is the psychotic situation that we are in right now, that we have a completely incompetent, corrupt buffoon in Biden. And then we have this other thing. Basically, what you're saying, in essence, what you're saying is, and I think a lot of people agree with this, there's probably some good things about Trump. There's some bad things about Trump, for sure. But it's what the reaction to him will be. Can we survive that? What an absolutely horrific choice that is to have to make whatever country you live in, if those are your two choices. And there were ways out of this. It did not have to be this way, but this is what the system has given us. So will America survive? I mean, America is a massive country. We have states that have very, very different policies as it relates to all of this. As I said, I'm in Florida, where we are the best state on virtually every metric, economically, prime. The weather happens to be great. Like we're also geographically, you know, we're a peninsula. So we have a Coast Guard that can guard our borders. And then we really have just really one main border with Georgia and a little smaller one with Louisiana. Like we can protect ourselves properly. We're building infrastructure. People are bringing companies and money and families in here. We're bringing, you know, all the police officers that don't want to work in New York anymore. We're giving them bonuses to come down here. So as the blue states, as the crime increases, they're losing police officers. It's getting worse on the streets, more drugs here, and we're bringing in the best of the best. So will America survive? Yeah, there will be something called the United States of America. But I would say in 10 years from now, short of something that we just like some black swan event that we can't really, you know, that's why it's a black swan event. You don't know what the hell it's going to be. I think that the states will just go in their different directions. And by the way, that's what the founders intended. Mm-hmm. The media will frame it. The media will frame it as everything I just said is right-wing craziness and insurrection lunacy. But the founders intended that 90% of what would happen to your day-to-day life would be dictated by what the state was, meaning that the state would decide most of the stuff and then you would decide. That's the great experiment. Mm-hmm. Boy, you don't like income tax? Move to Texas, move to Florida. You do like income tax? Move to California, see if you get better services. What's very bizarre is our roads in Florida seem to be nicer than the roads in California. So I don't know what they're doing with all that money.
I think that's a sufficiently white pill.
How is that? Move to Florida? Well, I don't want anyone moving to Florida, so.
You know, well, I was almost waiting for you to say that Florida should secede from the union, which perhaps you wouldn't go that far, but.
Not yet. Yeah. Let's pick this up in a year.
Let's pick it up in a year.
Yeah.
Dave, it's a great pleasure. All the
beautiful
more success.
Studio, by the way.
What, isn't it stunning out in there? But thank you so much. Thank you for your team for hosting it. And is there anything that my listeners should know about you that we haven't touched on? Or is there anything that you'd like to point them towards?
RubenReport.locals.com.
Beautiful. Dave Rubin, a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Winston Marshall Show with me, Winston Marshall. If you enjoyed that episode, I humbly ask that you like, share, and subscribe. But otherwise, stay tuned. There'll be more coming soon.